Well, we are glad to see you this morning. I'm glad to welcome each one who happens to be visiting our assembly. And so I'm back again to try once more, undaunted and determined. I may remind you of what you have sung here this morning before this hour is over. Faith of our fathers, holy faith, we will be true to you till death. I believe in Mount Calvary. I will believe whatever the cost. I think those are the kinds of commitment that we have made and must keep alive, but sometimes we do forget. A week or so ago, I studied with a group of high school students from age 14 to 19. Well, some of them had finished high school. And I was privileged to study with them the book of Proverbs. We remember a few of them, I think. But I'm not sure that the impact of the book always comes home to us. It was a good reminder for me. It is a book frequently alluded to and quoted in the New Testament. Paul quotes it in the 12th chapter of Romans. If your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. The writer of Hebrews quotes the Proverbs in the 12th chapter. Don't despise the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when you are reproved by him. So that we know this is something that is more than just ordinary household chimney corner wisdom. The theme of the book is stated at least three times. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Chapter 1, verse 7, chapter 9, verse 10. The writer of the book in the main is Solomon. I don't know when he wrote it. There are some additional proverbs in the last two chapters. But what I want to focus on is something out of the first nine chapters. And remind you that in those first nine chapters, that Solomon is speaking as a father to his son about getting wisdom as the highest thing. The kind of wisdom he speaks about is practical in that it deals with daily life. But this wisdom, Solomon said, comes from God. So we read these verses with that conviction. What you had read before you is a very sad story. In this first nine chapters of the book, Solomon personifies wisdom as a woman. And then there is, on the other hand, this immoral woman who represents folly. And these two women are calling out to the young. And I might say, not so young. And the two women seem to be in about the same place. On the street corner, at the city square, on the high position, on the high mountain, whatever. Wisdom is calling. And also there is this other woman who's calling. In many ways, this symbolizes the challenges we all face as we try to live wisely and godly in this world. And there are two voices out there that are entreating. What we're looking at here is a story of how temptation traps us. And how we try to cover what we're doing with some justification or excuse. And how its inevitable progression continues until it's virtually too late for us. This is Solomon's story of a young man. He said he saw from his lattice as he looked out one evening a young man all alone in the dark of night. And he goes down a certain street. And it happens to be a street that leads at last to the corner where this woman lives, who's referred to as immoral, a seductress. So he said, no harm in checking it out. Now, I want to tell you that this process of seduction started in this boy's mind before he ever walked down that street. He walked down that street because he thought about it. And he probably said to himself, as many of us had, just a moment's glance, just want to see for a second what it's all about, and I'm done with it. But you notice the progression. Obviously, he thought about it, then he walked down the street which passed her corner, then when he got to that corner, he took the path to her house. Question. What in the wide world was he doing in that part of town anyway? He was tempting himself. He was titillating himself. As someone observed, he was either a very foolish young man or a very proud one or both to think that he could just fly in the face of temptation, no harm. So, no harm in checking it out. You know how the forbiddenness of sin attracts us. Attracted Eve in the Garden of Eden, didn't it? You can't eat of the tree in the midst of the garden, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You cannot eat of that. And she couldn't think about all the rest of them there afterward. And we are the same way. We don't count our blessings one by one. The things we may do because we are God's children, because we are serving the Lord. All the wonderful things and privileges we have are not counted. What we think about is the thing that we are denied. Notice the ninth chapter, verse 13, that same clamorous woman. A foolish woman is clamorous. She is simple and knows nothing, for she sits on the door of her house on a seat by the highest places of the city to call to those who pass by who go straight on their way. Whoever is simple, let him turn in here. And as for him who lacks understanding, she says to him, stolen water is sweet and bread eaten in secret is pleasant. But he does not know that the dead are there and that her guests are in the depths of hell. Stolen waters are sweet. I know I've told the story many times of Augustine, who in his confession said that when he was a young man, he and some of his fellows went stealing over into the neighbor's pear orchard and got into a tree and took all the pears they could get and didn't even eat them. He said, we had better pears at home. But the thrill of rebellion was in it. Does that appeal? Yes. It's a part of the temptation. And we convince ourselves, as I noted before, that we're going to take a quick look. But here's the truth. And it's the truth we know. To go in the direction of sin is to make sin our goal. The minute that boy thought about that woman, and the minute he let those thoughts continue, is when he had made up his mind he was moving in the direction of what was wrong, even if he did not admit it to himself. God's counsel is very clear in chapter 4, verse 26. Ponder the path of your feet, and let all your ways be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Remove your foot from evil. And then in chapter 5, verse 8, speaking of this very woman, remove your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house. Why is it that when we know we are tempted by certain things, and it doesn't happen to be a sexual thing, this is a model for all temptation in many ways, why do we go where we'll be tempted? Why do we put ourselves in positions that make us vulnerable to that? We know what our weaknesses are. Why do we go there? Why was he in that part of town? And why are we in the part of town we're in many times? Knowing what's going to happen. And we say to ourselves as we indulge in these secret darknesses, nobody needs to know. He came, says Solomon, in the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night. He didn't want others to know. He came by himself. He was not interested in having it exposed that he's involved in this, even this possibility. And we don't want others to know our secret lusts, our hidden anger or selfishness. We don't want them to know. And of course, we say to ourselves, they would not understand our special need here. We are in special circumstances. We're in special difficulties, and they wouldn't understand that. Are you sure that's the reason? Or is it not, as is obvious on the face of it, we do not want them to know because we'd be ashamed of it if they did. And we want to go on pursuing what is shameful. Why hide our lusts and our sins if they are justified? Why do we have to creep around in the darkness to do that? Darkness is a metaphor in Scripture for what? For sin, evil, even in Proverbs that is the case. Proverbs chapter 2 and verse 12. To deliver you from the way of evil, from the man who speaks perverse things, from those who leave the paths of uprightness to walk in the ways of darkness. In John chapter 3, verse 9, when Jesus is discussing, does discuss that God's great love for the world was such that he gave his only begotten Son. But he comes to explain why some people, when they are confronted with a love like that, and with the light that shines out of heaven, as it did in his case, this is their response. And this is the condemnation, that the light has come into the world, and men love darkness rather than light because their deeds were evil. They did not want those deeds exposed. Well, let me tell you, they need to be exposed. And I'll tell you who needs to expose them. You need to expose them. You need to bring them to the light and let the light shine on them. Ephesians 5, verse 8, where the Apostle Paul takes up this very matter of light and darkness. For you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness, righteousness, and truth, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. For it is shameful even to speak of those things which are done by them in secret. But all things that are exposed are made manifest by the light, for whatever makes manifest is light. And that's exactly what needs to be done. Hidden sins grow worse and become more deeply embedded. Simple truth. Here's what God's wisdom demands. Number one, that you turn to God and tell him every last detail, because he knows it anyway. But he needs to know you know. And if you're unable to do that, it is because you don't want to turn loose of this thing you're involved in. Expose your sinful thoughts and actions to him, and don't hold back. 139th Psalm, the last two verses. Search me and try me, David pleads. Search my heart. Try me to see if there's any evil way within me that I may walk in the ways that are everlasting. That is an appeal on the part of the psalmist for God to look at his life, and he's opening it up. I know that is painful from experience. But I will tell you, it is a pain that is healing. And then the second thing you need to do is tell some trusted friend and ask him to pray for you, which is likely the meaning of James 5:16. Confess your sins one to another and pray one for another that you may be healed. It's not going to happen. We're going to keep on in this dark course, this hidden way of desires and thoughts and practices in too many instances that are going to increase and progress in their intensity until at last we're overwhelmed by them and destroyed. Next, a woman met him, and such a woman she was, with the attire of a harlot, crafty heart, loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. He's now tempted by the woman. He didn't just walk by her corner. He didn't just go up to the house. The door is open now, and she's standing there. Shouldn't have happened, but now there it is. Feet is spelled W-E-E-T, by the way. She's forward. She's dressed to seduce while in getting what she wants, unconcerned as the consequences to others. And may I say to you, this woman is described here might be called a harlot because of the way she's behaving. She's dressed like a prostitute, but the indication is not that she is a professional prostitute. And I want to say this to you. It's possible today not to be a prostitute or have any intention of being a prostitute, but to dress like one. I was here in the 1960s. Went away to Africa in 1962 and came back in 1965 to be shocked at the dress of women in this country. Mary Poit and the miniskirt had just swept through this culture, and unfortunately it had swept as effectively through women who were Christians. It was embarrassing for men to have to sit in the presence of some seated women. Preaching was done. Appeals were made. Instruction was given as best we knew how, but in too many instances with little effect. And it made one wonder, are we just sort of conform to the culture, and at the moment it happens to be okay, but if it swiftly changes, then what are we going to do? I have noticed already in recent days a rising of the skirt level above the knee, well above the knee, and it fills my heart with dread. We have to stop and think. Maybe the intent is not to seduce, but we become seductive. I looked out with great dismay recently in my neighborhood to a young girl who's probably most 12 years of age, daughter of a neighbor. She had a skirt that was slit halfway up her thigh, and she was walking on high heels, and she just looked like a tart. And I wondered to myself, what is her mother thinking? But that's where it begins. In middle school girls' lives, and also with young men, too. There could be much mention. It's a tragic thing. And it's one that is so easily transcended and transformed by just wanting to do what reflects chastity, honor, goodness, and righteousness. So he looks at her now, and he sees her as the wild and free one. You know, nobody tells her what to do. They don't tell her where she can or cannot go. Can't tell her what she can or cannot say. Nobody to ask her what time she got in. I mean, he sees this as something wonderful. You can do what you wish. Is that not one of the allures of sin? Don't we have the feeling that the people out there that are doing all those wild and wonderful things that are so free, never have asked themselves the question, is this right or wrong? Aren't they the ones that are really having the good time? Isn't that one of the seductions? Yes, we start convincing ourselves at that moment that things are better. Life is better for those who don't have to worry about right and wrong. Job's question in Job 21 may be a bit familiar to us. Verse 7. Why do the wicked live and become old? Yes, become mighty in power. Their descendants are established with them in their sight, and their offspring before their eyes. Their houses are safe from fear. Neither is the rod of God upon them. Their bulls breed without failure. Their cows calve without miscarriage, etc., etc., etc. Why, Job says, why do the wicked prosper, in other words? And he's asking that while he himself is being ravaged by tragedy and catastrophe and bad health. God answers the question. The 37th Psalm. In the language of David, the father of the one who gives us most of the Proverbs. And here's the statement, the first two verses. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like the grass and wither as the green herb. Don't worry about that. They are going to come to a bad end. And Solomon in Proverbs 24 speaks about the same thing as his father had. And Psalm 73 has always been an interesting one to me because the psalmist writes about how he escaped from some awful trouble in his mind. For he says in verse 3 as he begins his psalm, "For I was envious of the boastful when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. For there are no pangs in their death, but their strength is firm," etc., etc., etc. Ever had that feel? Why do I deny myself all these things? When the people that don't, they're the ones that don't suffer. They're the ones that have no trouble. They're the ones that have no difficulty. And he said in verse 2, "My feet had almost stumbled, my steps had nearly slipped because of this." Verse 17, "Until I went into the sanctuary of God, and then I understood their end. Surely you set them in slippery places. You cast them down to destruction." You want to go that road? I don't care how it looks. I don't care that freedom that is attracting you. You need to look behind the scenes of these wicked lives, these unrighteous lives, these heedless, careless lives, at the broken homes and the split families, at the ravaged marriages, at the children massacred emotionally, spiritually. You need to see what's going on, really, in all the lives of these high-living individuals, because it's dark and tragic. There's no freedom here. There's only slavery. And Solomon said it in Proverbs chapter 5, verse 22 and 23. Speaking of this man whose ways are wicked, "His own iniquities entrap the wicked man, and he is caught in the cords of his sin. He shall die for lack of instruction, and the greatness of his folly he shall go astray." He's caught in the cords of his sin. Listen, sin will bind you. The habit will grab you, and take you, and you won't be able to get out of it without the greatest exertion and spiritual assertion. You'll be a bondservant. Like so much that devil entreats us with. We come and take it because it looks like it's going to be great at the beginning, and it is, but afterward it goes down like a serpent, bitter, the consequence is awful. And if there's anything that Solomon does in the Proverbs, it's to urge us to look down the road and see where this thing is going. Take a look at the consequence. And the devil is busy saying, don't concern yourselves with the consequences. Think about what you would like to have now. Think about what would be wonderful now. Don't concern yourselves about that. You know you deserve something better than you've been having. You know that this is something you ought to have. And if we listen to that, the consequences are apparent. John 8, verse 31, 32. If you abide in my word, Jesus said, you shall be truly my disciples, and the truth will what? And the truth will make you free. How are you going to be free living a lie? Something that does not exist, some fictitious sort of circumstances, playing out this drama that you have in your own mind as if this is real. It's not real. What God says is real, and what God says is true is true. And that will not be escaped. And of course, Romans 6 speaks about the fact that those who yield themselves to someone become a slave of that one. And whoever yields himself to sin becomes a slave of sin. You're not free. What we want to be as Christians is free to be righteous, free to be just, free to be good, free to be pure. That is a blessed freedom. And if I have to submit myself as the slave of Christ to achieve it, it is worth every bit of it. I would rather be a slave of Christ who loves me, who died for me, and of a God who sent him to die for me, than to be a slave of a force that cares nothing for me whatsoever except the desire for my destruction. Everybody's doing it. At times she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. If you have a desire and a lust and a secret hidden wish, well, there's opportunity for you everywhere to fulfill it. You can see it, sinful activity in the media, at school, at the workplace, at the club, among your friends, in the neighborhood, even among Christians. Sad to say. I had to speak with a young man while I was in those studies with those young people who told about some of his Christian friends who were entreating him to take drugs. I'm not naive. And I'm not omniscient. But I know among Christians, things go on that absolutely are the darkness. And I know that young people, in their simpleness, and I mean by that naivete, are drawn into doing things that they ought not do, and the consequence of which will be very adult in nature. Our justification is we're just human like everybody else. We can't be perfect. The temptation is too great. The day you say that is the day that you're already caught in sin's snare, because you just declared to the devil, I can't defeat you. I'm absolutely vulnerable to you. Whatever you entreat me to do, that's what I'm going to do. I can't help myself. Well, you can. Everybody may be doing it, but you do not have to do it. We are able. We are able to defeat this force. Matthew 5, verse 6. I love those Beatitudes. Blessed are those that hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Is that a promise or not? If you hunger and thirst for righteousness, will you not be filled with it? Jesus says, yes. Chapter 5, verse 8, another Beatitude. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Can we be pure in heart? Absolutely. That is the promise. That is the hope. 7, 24 and 25. The man that hears these words of mine and does them, I will liken him to the man that built his house upon the rock. And the rain descended, the winds came, and the house stood because he built upon a rock. What is that but a promise? We can do that. But I'll tell you something. We must want to resist the temptation. We must want to overcome it. If we do not, we will never do so. There has to be the resolve. Ah, but how can this be wrong? So she caught him and kissed him, and with an impudent face she said to him, I have peace offerings with me today, I have paid my vows. And my question was, first of all, I want to note the progression here. He thought about it, he went down that street, he went up to her house, the door was open, and now there she is face to face with him, and not only that, but she's saying, I'm ready, and she's taken him and kissed him. And what are peace offerings and vows have to do with this kind of assignation? That's my question. I have my peace offerings with the, I have paid my vows. Now, some observers of this particular text have said that has to be pagan in nature. Maybe. And maybe not. Let me tell you. About the time somebody was going to get you into trouble, doing things you ought not to be doing, they'll say, well, you're religious? I'm religious too. I'm religious too. I go to church too. What's this going to church? What's that got to do with anything? I go to church too. I don't have any doubt that'll happen. But here's one that's even more fine. As you think about the joys before you, would God want you or me to be unhappy? Doesn't God want us to be happy? Let me answer that for you. No. God wants you to be righteous and good and just and joyful and peaceful and all the rest that's involved. Happy at this moment. God was going to let you be happy at this moment and see you destroy your soul. What a loving Father. Well, that's the argument, you know. And sometimes it comes to us in very strange ways. If you haven't found the mate you desired, and you said to yourself, maybe I'll never have a mate, and maybe I'll never experience the sexual delights, and so I ought to have some experience of that, and it looks like this is the only way I'm going to get it. So, would God want me to be unhappy? If it means doing ungodly things, absolutely yes. Just like your mother and father wanted you to be unhappy. Wanted you to be unhappy? No, that wasn't the idea. They weren't trying to make you unhappy, but they were glad to make you unhappy if it kept you from doing what was wrong and disastrous, weren't they? Remember when you were unhappy? Did your mother and father say when you're unhappy, oh, I'm so sorry about that. Just cancel everything I've said. You do whatever you please. Oh, darling, I want you to be happy. I don't want you to be sad. I don't want any trouble to have come to you. We don't have any problem between us. I tell you, you just ratchet that up many, many, many times, and your Heavenly Father, you're not going to say that either. But someone truly cares for me. Listen to what she said. Listen, this woman has got it. I have come out to meet you, to seek your presence, and I have found you. Somebody loves me. Somebody cares. That's another lie. She cares for you tonight. The husband's away. He'll be back in a month, maybe. I care for you. You're there to satisfy her immediate needs. I'll tell you something. Sin doesn't intend to bless us. It intends to blast us. 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 8. I decided I'd use some graphics on this one, and I took it away. I put a lion on the front of the title. I said, that doesn't get the job done. I couldn't find a temptress I could put up there, but I remember 1 Peter 5, verse 8. The devil goes about like a roaring lion seeking whom he may devour. He will devour you. I want to bless you. And those temptresses in this world, this culture that lifts its voice to you from every corner and high place and says, come, 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 come. We have wonderful things. They're not intended to bless you whatsoever. I'll tell you who truly cares for you. It's God. And I remind you of the words again that appear in the 12th chapter of Hebrews, but they also appear in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 11. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father, the son, in whom he delights. He looks down the long road, asks what this would do for his child, and says no. He wants to save us from disaster. You remember what was said in 5, verses 4 and 5. But in the end, speaking of this woman, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps lay hold of hell. Lest you ponder her path of life. Her ways are unstable. You do not know them. But the woman will say, look, I got all these Egyptian sheets in here. I've got this place decorated. I've got myrrh and aloes and all kinds of sweet perfume. And he said, well, look at this, it's ready. Interestingly enough, in the Song of Solomon, all this language is used about pure marital love. All that sweetness is there. all that delectable. Her lips are like honey and everything like that. It's all there. And it's right. And it has depth to it because it's married love and committed love. And that love can go on and on and on. And with every passing year, there is a greater depth to it. But you can't get out of this woman. There's no way it's possible. The seductress allures him with a pleasure. The moment, ultimate consequences are concealed. Don't think about tomorrow. Think about tonight. Think about what you want tonight. The temporariness is sin's pleasure. Hebrews 11. Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. No one will know. He will know, my husband's not at home. By the way, that text in Hebrews said, for the man is not at home. It doesn't sound too respectful. Well, she is not. How? How does she respect him? As soon as he gets out of town, she's looking for some other consort. He'd gone on a long journey. Have you ever said, what's the harm? Who will know? Has that been whispered in your mind as you contemplate the possibility of doing something you know is not right? I tell you something. You think you conceal it from others? God knows and you know. Now, wait a minute. That's not what I intend to write there. Strike that we and put you. Well, I could include all of us. We know. It's in our consciousness. We know what we've done. You think that's just going to lie there? Unmoving? Having no influence whatsoever? You think this will not be repeated again and again and again? Let me tell you, in pornography, we're just going to take a look at this and see what awful stuff's going on the internet. We're just going to look at this. We're just going to look at this CD. We're just going to take a quick look at this and see what kind of garbage is out there. We're not going to stay around. I'm just going to bet a few dollars over here at the casino. I'm not going to do any more of that. Let me tell you, I know cases of marriages that have been broken asunder because of gambling. Compulsive gambling. Man, a preacher, gets in gambling and he destroys himself, destroys his family. Just a little, that's all. And pornography, it is a sickness. It is an addiction of serious proportions. And it destroys relationships. Young people, old people, whoever you are. You are listening to the blandishments of the likes of this woman that Solomon talks about. No one will know indeed. I tell you one thing. Proverbs says in Proverbs 4, verse 23, keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it are the springs of life. Your heart will sooner or later be exposed by deeds. People will see how your ardor is dying, how your interest in spiritual things is tailing off. You won't be able to keep up the front. Don't think you can conceal it. If you make your heart a sewer, it will stink. Others will at last see it. Sin corrupts and sin is progressive. It doesn't stand still. We know that. Sad ending here. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately, he went after her. As an ox goes to slaughter. And that's how we go to sin. But see the progress. It didn't happen overnight. First we thought about it. Like this young man. Then we decided we'd take a stroll down that side of town. Just going to check out the scenery. Then we noticed, that's where she lives. And we decided we'd walk up the path. Maybe we want to go in. We're just going to walk up the path. And then finally, we're inside, and we're in the bed. What he refused to acknowledge throughout this whole procedure was that he is straight into a slaughterhouse, where his life was to be dismembered one by one. What did the wise man say? Listen to me, my children. Do not stray into her paths. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. We have been warned. We have been warned. God doesn't want that to happen. That's what temptation does. How it traps us. and overwhelms us. But if we don't start out, we need to gain some victories over those first thoughts, don't we? Before we begin to think about the dark side of town. And then we don't take any journeys down there. If you can't go into a bookstore without being seduced, stay away from bookstores. If you can't be watching television without being seduced, leave the television set alone. Do not go to the places where you are going to be tempted. That's idiotic. Blessed the pure in heart, for they shall see God. We can do this. God will enable us to do this. Resist the devil, James said, and he will flee from you. Submit yourself to the Lord. So we appeal to ourselves and to all who listen today to remember the subtle seduction that the devil uses and resist it absolutely. Seek God. Ask his mercy. Beseech him for strength. Get help from others. But do right. And hold fast. What do we say in these songs? Faith of our fathers. Holy faith. We will be true to you till death. I believe in Malcolm. I will believe whatever the cost. Let us go and do it. And live with that. If you're not a Christian in this audience this morning, well, I know the God that created you would sure like you to be. He's the one that sent his son here. With the knowledge that the only thing in the world that would break our spirits and turn us back to him was for his son to die. And that by that means alone, he could forgive us of all our transgressions because he has laid upon him the iniquity of us all. With that possible blessing, with that wonderful blessing as a prospect, I entreat you now to come and confess your faith in Jesus. I know you believe. I know you believe. But now will you act upon that faith and come and be born anew by being, on the basis of a penitent faith, baptized into Christ for the forgiveness of your sins so you can rise up from that grave to walk in newness of life. Or if as a Christian now, you haven't been living right, been living this dark, secret life, it will not work. Stop it now. Renounce it now. Do whatever is necessary to correct it now while we stand together and sing.